It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at Post 9 of the New York Stock Exchange. Futures turn positive here as the jobs number for February, while a beat at 275 comes with big downward revisions and the highest unemployment rate in 2 years. 10-year drops to 404 and a June cut is fully priced in once again. Our roadmap begins with that getting the Fed's attention. Hiring still strong, but unemployment coming in higher than expected. What that means for the fate of rate cuts.
Plus, of course, we're always keeping an eye on tech. For example, Apple shares, can they stem what has been a seven-day slide? Chip stocks, though, continue to outperform. And the other big story, that weight loss boom, Novo Nordisk overtakes Tesla's market valuation. Meanwhile, Eli Lilly jabs at Hollywood for its Ozempic craze.
Let's begin with some market reaction to the jobs number, not just the headline and the unemployment at 3.9, Jim, but revisions taking about a third away the last couple of months.
Yeah, I think that those of us who are used to the precision of artificial intelligence, generative AI, and of course accelerated computing, are just in shock that there could be a number that's this far off. This is the kind of thing that Jensen Huang could solve with his eyes closed. It's a little embarrassing, but because why it's so important is that this takes away what was the hot number that made us have a great fret and took away, I would say, David, a spring rate cut, whatever. 3.9, we know that those numbers, they remind me of the Dow Jones average. You know, it's a very interesting headline, but it's not really the guts of this. But in a political year, what that says is, hey, look, the economy's slowing and maybe the Fed should have some pressure on it, especially after last night's State of the Union, which was about walking the picket line.
But isn't this a good number from the market's perspective and or from the economy's? I mean, almost a, dare I say, Goldilocks?
No, I was going to say perfect.
Yeah.
And it's funny because
you're still strong. The wage growth is not that big. You've got the revisions down to your point about sort of, you know, right. at least no overheating,
well,
so to speak.
If you're a Fed chief, you probably spent all your life trying to be able to have this economy. The economy, you know, Carl, without a lot of inflation that has good growth. And I know I heard people this morning still talk about soft landing versus hard landing. It's very clear that that's a false dichotomy for a man like Powell. Powell's not talking about landing. He's talking about having consistent growth, a lot of people getting jobs, not being inflationary. If anyone's ever listened to him or read anything about this man, he is not about, I got to cool the economy. He's about having an economy that's the greatest, equal to the greatness of our country. And I think he's been slagged by pretty much everybody, and maybe that's where he's really happiest.
There's the headline. Really, the word's not far right. from enough confidence. That's what got at least the journal's attention during the testimony yesterday.
I know that we had the full coverage, and other than Senator Warren, who's a firebrand and kind of a Mary Lee Siegel back in time to like populist time. Other than that, I mean, geez, you know, David, I was able to catch, I think I caught maybe like a 45-minute nap.
Oh, yeah, no, it's...
I was tired, though. I had done an all-nighter the night before.
2 days of Powell with all those politicians is two days too many as far as I'm concerned.
Do you know the alarm function on this thing?
Yeah.
Where if you wait, it comes on a second time? That was really important because I think that there was a senator from Ohio, I will not mention, who once castigated me. He was really worth taking a nap through. So I didn't mention his name, so I don't have to worry. Because Sherrod Brown would know the difference. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Chairman Brown.
Chairman Brown.
Yes.
But the guy whose book I read at the advice of Howard Schultz, Vance?
Oh, hillbilly elegy guy. Yeah.
I think that he, you know, he's got a bit of Faulkner in him.
Mm.
He ought to learn, you know, a little sentence. He's not a stream of consciousness guy.
No, not like you, Jim.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Speaking of, any other thoughts on the jobs number before we sort of move on to some of the stocks moving this morning?
How about if you want to, maybe this is the number you've been looking for to buy the semiconductors.
Everybody's been buying the semiconductors. Has nothing to do with it. There are some people who are a little concerned about the momentum that we continue to see in some of these names.
Well, I think they should be.
Even though the underlying fundamentals are strong, it's like, whoa.
No one's ever seen a stock. You come in Marvell, and I don't want to pick on Murphy because he's a really good CEO, but the call was really downbeat except for his one part of optical with AI. And the stock was down 10 and it finished down 4. Hock Tan, in the middle of his conference call, they were Broadcom, the stock was down 40. Then he mentioned that they're going to do $10 billion in AI.
Right.
And next thing you know, it's like, boom.
Versus 7.5 prior. Siena was the other name earlier in the week, Jim, that talked about legacy weakness in enterprise and telcos, right?
Look, that's just the service provider telco business has gone away. Look, there's companies in that business, AT&T, Verizon, they've spent their years trying to not have to spend any more money. And people keep waiting. It's a good dose situation. Don't look at the symbol. It's much, much more of a work of literature. But I like to keep him up these days.
No, I know. I'm okay on my Godot. I'm all right. Not great.
But I just find that if you mention AI, this is the problem. If you mention AI within anywhere involving your company, it's just a license to have your stock go higher. And I think that, David, that's what I think is... I mean, Carl, look, we've had these times where I remember in 2000 when there were companies, great companies, companies like WorldCom, they were doing fabulous things.
Yes, there were. I would not in any way compare what we're seeing today with what ultimately was, to a certain extent of their business, fraud.
No, but I think that when I look at Edward R. Murrow's piece on Senator McCarthy and David's piece at the gym, at the basketball court with Bernie Ebers, those are really it.
There were definitely some moments there.
I'm sorry to be so reverential. It must be like your birthday or something.
I appreciate that. But back to the semis. I mean, listen, nobody or few people doubt the power of this moment in terms of AI and generative AI, what it's going to mean. But it doesn't mean that these stocks may not be a bit ahead of themselves, Jim. I'm starting to hear some concern out there about just this momentum trade.
Ben Rice is from Melius, who's really had the great beat on things, was talking about, listen, don't write off AMD. Well, I mean, if you look at the chart of AMD, no one was really writing off.
Nobody
AMD.
Seems to be writing it off.
He hikes his target by $70 today.
I know. And I sent him a quick email saying, you know, congratulations, because he does have a beat on things. But I'm going out to see Jensen. I'm making what everyone is calling the pilgrimage. At the same time that market historian Larry Williams, who's been right more than he's wrong, is saying that's going to mark the peak in the NASDAQ, and he wasn't quite aware that happened to be coincident with what Jensen's saying. In the meantime, the early look at what Jensen's saying, and he's in deep dive mode, is he's talking about verticals. He's just not just talking about computing.
All right, this is not next week, but the week after that.
Yes.
That you'll be out there, and then we're going to get this keynote.
Yes.
Which we get every year.
Well, but this
year
there's
more
focus. Person.
In person.
And
what's in person? He's in person? Are you going to interview him as well for us, do you think?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And what I think is important, David, is that this is a person, when he shows up anywhere.
Yes.
Whether it be with HP, whether he be with ARM, you know, Rene Haas is very close, and they work together.
Yes, I know. At NVIDIA, they work together.
Yeah, you just find that people just say, you know what, sell everything and buy this. I mean, they're like, I don't know how there's enough money between the 5% on the sidelines and NVIDIA, unless the money's coming out of Apple.
It has been.
Yes, it
there's
has.
No doubt about that. That stock, as we said, down some 7 consecutive sessions.
That's a very long time.
As we come to end this week, concern about sales of iPhones in China, which represents as much as 20% of their sales. Concerns about their strategy when it comes to generative AI and when they're going to. We are obviously waiting, and there's this air pocket between now and June, let's call it, when we may get some news.
And we may not even get that phone.
Dropping a couple of hints during the annual meeting.
Yeah, but now, David, the one thing I would say is that we've had some defense coming out. We had a note this morning about how Apple may have some good service revenue. But again, what people want to see is a phone that's equal to the Samsung phone, which...
Right, but it's going to be a while. It's going to be quite a while.
Well, but during the interim, it's not like this company is a pitiful, helpless giant.
No. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be something that excites investors.
No. Look,
sees some leg of growth. Again, to look back, Jim, we're not talking about a company that's seen a lot of revenue growth.
No, and I've been saying that.
Seeing revenue declines.
Thank you.
I've been saying that to the club, listen, let it go down to 160. But there's been so many periods in my career where it's done this you look, of course, even in 2011, when Steve Jobs passed, there was just these periods where it just said, it's over. And this company has giant lulls. I do believe that NVIDIA can pass it, which is pretty amazing.
You do. So but, you think NVIDIA can add another trillion?
Yeah, I do.
Not even. It doesn't even need to get that
actually,
much.
You know what? You're
Apple's
right.
Apple's taking care of the downside.
You're right. Apple's taking care of it. It's about $600 billion difference right now. I'll take a quick
But off. It's remember, NVIDIA's enterprise, so people don't see it. People go Apple, and there was a great hoopla for the Vision Pro, and then that kind of went away, and people have to more.
I'm way off. It's less than $300 billion market cap discrepancy. It's funny. You're right.
It's a giant crevasse to the, or as you would say, David, it's kind of a little offsides head and shoulders. I stay away from technical looks.
NVIDIA could move into the number two position in market value.
NVIDIA was a $100 billion company 5 years ago.
Yeah. What's been fascinating was the attention paid to Jensen's Stanford remarks over the weekend, where he talked about washing dishes and cleaning toilets. I've cleaned more toilets than all of you combined. Just the humility behind this guy, behind this powerhouse.
When you go out, the Denny's period. Not everyone's had a Denny's period. The substantial time spent both washing dishes there, but also coming up with the next generation design. And we're talking about 1992. This is a long time coming. But he had this view for the H100 10 years ago, which is he thinks differently from us. There was a guy who used to be in the top seven that was a very visionary guy. My name is Mateo.
Oh, yes, Elon. Yeah, yeah.
The thinking was so great. Remember he had that period where he left Criminal Minds because he thought it was criminal porn?
You mean Patinkin?
Yeah,
Mandy Patinkin.
Well, that was Chicago Hope before that.
He showed
that.
Up. Yeah. I saw him. He's in some.
Yes.
Some.
He has a new, Amazon or Netflix series?
Yeah. Really? I got to watch it. He's excellent. But the reason I mentioned, of course, is because in David's unbelievable and also seminal interview.
Thank you.
He came
May
up.
May 16th last year, we referenced Inigo Montoya, of course, and the famous, yes, he misquoted him.
Yeah, he did.
But what is your point here about Elon Musk, Jim?
Well, because I just think that mighty fall. I mean, there was just not that long ago that Elon Musk was the richest man. Now, Bezos.
Think he's fallen?
No, because there's other things that he's focused
Tesla
on.
Tesla still has a $570 billion market value. SpaceX is still the only thing, basically, that NASA has to get anything out into the atmosphere.
Musk is brilliant. I just feel like that when you look at what's happening with Letter X, and when you read the truncated emails for Sam Altman, you have to say that this man is a tad distracted, plus a billion-dollar arson in Germany, and then the Chinese cutting the price of cars. I use the term animal is horrible. You wouldn't endorse that.
Might not, but it's not all roses, that's for sure.
No. Stock's about flat from the time David sat down with them. The Tesla shares yesterday, lowest level since May, Jim. And Jonas's note this week is interesting. Toyota, he wrote, which has zero exposure to battery EVs, is going to gain more share in this country than any other OEM.
Well, look, Toyota has the possibility of the miraculous 10-minute charge that we're all waiting for.
10-minute charge.
10-minute charge. Well, look, this is a high-stakes game.
Is that like the super energy drink? Yeah, kind of like that,
energy,
right?
The 5-hour energy, 10-minute charge. Part of the hostile takeover that took the street.com away from me after 25 years.
What was the connection between 5-hour energy?
They now own it.
Really?
Yeah,
same guys?
David, the synergy there and the artificial intelligence they use to find all sorts of new reporters makes me feel terrific about the legacy that I've cemented.
As you should. Yeah.
One of the great periods of my life was a quarter of my life was really devoted to giving people health care. That was what I concentrated on.
Apparently that's
at the Admiral Care Plan. We haven't even talked about United Health and the Oldman hack.
No, we're going to get to some recent calls on UNH. We'll talk some Rivian as well, speaking of EVs. Yeah. Watch some retail, Gap, which Jim had on last night, and Costco. Got news on Lilly and Novo. Upgrade of GE. We'll talk about all that in a minute.
We exceeded expectations, both top line and bottom line. We gained market share, and all of this has been driven by the strength in our two largest brands. But the efforts that we're making in operational and financial rigor, that's what's showing up in the numbers.
That's GAP's chief Richard Dixon with Jim last night on Mad Money. The retailer up sharply on this holiday quarter beat, helped by improving trends, as Jim has told you, at Old Navy and its flagship brand. Different story over at Costco, moving lower on the revenue miss, really, as customers did pull back on spending. Company beats on the bottom line, has some strength in e-commerce. Jim, there's a name where the PE's gone from the 30s to the mid-40s in about a year.
Yeah, I want to... There was a characterization of some weakness there, and I think that people are caught up in a little bit of the facetious nature of the unbelievable CFO, Rich Galanti. Congratulations, Rich, who retired, probably the greatest CFO of our time. I think the disappointment was people felt he would go out with a membership price boost, which 90% falls to the customers and 10% falls to the shareholders, and he did not do that. That was going to be, we thought, his swan song. I thought the quarter was excellent. I see good discretionary spending. The Chinese stores do very well. Let it come in. It just had gave a great special dividend. David, there are companies that have done so many great things that when they come in so hot, it just doesn't matter what's said. But the people should have parsed the non-discresh and discresh spend because it was extraordinary. And all the stories about it did not mention the fact that they didn't give the price boost, which is what we wanted. And they did talk about doing advertising, a la what Walmart's doing, mm-hmm. and that's going to help them. That's free money.
Although they don't have nearly the online presence that Walmart
does. No, because
they
want you to go to the stores.
Yeah.
They want you to go to the
which
stores.
Which is where the advertising, obviously, is
right.
important.
But, I mean, people have to understand, Galanti is historically, he's a wry man, so he's not... people think that he was saying something is negative. That's because they don't understand Galanti speak. This is an amazing man, and he will be so missed as the CFO because he did not suffer fools gladly.
Well, to your point, when you look at that chart or go back any period of time, really, there's rare instances where the stock has declined for an extended period.
Right, and this is now something. This is the longest period in recent years that they haven't gone through a price increase in membership. So people thought that this would be his chance to do that.
Look
that's
that.
The real sadness.
That's just beautiful.
That's the real
it?
Disappointment was no membership boost. And I
right.
think that but, it's just a matter of time. The $15 special dividend impressed yeah. people for about 5 minutes.
It's been, I'm trying to think. We did our documentary in 2013 where we got to know it as an annuity, really, is what it is, based because of the membership fees.
Yep.
By the way, Jim, last night Galanti did talk about AI. We're in the early innings of that. Had some third-party companies in, large companies, including one headquartered in Seattle, come and talk to us about the things they can do on the IT stack.
Right. Look, I'm not saying that they are... oblivious to technology. They like to come in after, not unlike Apple, they come in after, they have it right. But in the end, David, when I was there, and we talked about the Camus that was underpriced, but the seminal moment, the lock spread.
Really?
The free lock spread.
That did it for you, put it over the top.
Yeah, and I confessed that I liked it, and then they gave me a plate of lox that was so big that we just kind of consumed it like we were dogs.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
it
was great. Great to know.
I just give you a little color now and then.
I appreciate
there
that.
There are some great, that was pre-TikTok, because at that point we still weren't brainwashed. We were actually using selfies.
Yeah, we got to talk about TikTok a bit as well. Obviously, its owner, ByteDance, not a public company, but an enormous company.
Do you sense that there's uniformity on that one issue in commerce?
It feels like that plan they had backfired a bit in terms of the pop-up that came
right.
up and call your congressman kind of thing.
Yeah, that seemed to overwhelm the system. It was not Mr. Smith goes to Washington with a lot of telegrams. No.
50-0 was the vote in energy and commerce on this measure that we do think will hit the House next week. Other news on Meta as well, on downloads. We'll get Cramer's Mad
yes.
Dash countdown to the opening bell. Take another look here. Final pre-market of the week. We're back in a moment. Take a look at some NASDAQ 100 gainers. That you'll see NVIDIA up another 3% a day after the semis relative to the S&P finally exceed the high from March of 2000. Powering forward as well with Intel this morning. Opening bell's coming up in about 5 minutes. And don't forget, you can catch us anytime, anywhere. Just listen to and follow the Squawk on the Street Opening Bell podcast.
All right, let's get to a mad dash before we get started trading here at the NYC for the last day of the week. Eli Lilly shares move on GLP-1s.
Right.
But we have talked about their potential treatment for Alzheimer's.
Yes.
And there was some news, Jim, from the FDA.
Yes, and it was not good. I have been saying, Lilly's even been running ads for it, been saying that Lilly's been saying this drug, their Alzheimer's drug, donanemab, would be approved this quarter. They expected it. There is a surprise delay. And it's because they want to convene a group of outside advisors. This does surprise me. For the work I did as the chief spokesman for the American Brain Foundation, I thought that this was a given. That was wrong. And I think that what's happened here is that this is a very big drug. This is, of course, people think it can do as much as arrest plaque in the brain. And it is, I'll call it disconcerting, just because I really did feel it was a given.
Right. So now we're going to get a meeting of the Peripheral and Central Nervous Systems Drug Advisory Committee to discuss the phase three trials. This phase three trials, by the way, enrolled 1,736 participants across eight countries. And to your point, Jim, showed that particularly with patients in earlier stages of the disease experiencing very strong results, is the way Lilly puts
that's
it.
That's the surprise.
In terms of benefit.
Yes, and I think it's important to point out that this was not a criticism which would have set it back. It's much more of a, we have to do more. I think one of the reasons, David, this would stress the system, it's that big. They really have to have this thing down, because everyone in America who had anyone who had Alzheimer's as a parent will demand this. So they have to have this thing down. So I still expect it to pass. I am surprised it did not get the outcome.
Let's get a look at the opening bell here at the big board at State Street. A global advisor celebrating International Women's Day, having done a little event at the girl outside on outside the exchange.
A very enjoyable tourist spot, not as equal to the bull, but I think should, just because it's kind of a great symbolism of some of the hope that we all have that more women get involved in the industry.
At the NASDAQ, it's the Muslim American Leadership Alliance. Jim, one of the notes out of Goldman today does talk about, even though a lot of water is being carried by Meta and NVIDIA, Tony P does point out industrials up 8 for the year, healthcare up 8 for the year.
I think that's very important, and 50% of the industrials are trading at their high. Last night, the president spoke about the real reindustrialization part of the economy, and that is the sweet spot. I think that if you want to know, I've been watching, I love Frank Holland's show in the morning. He had the CEO of Wesco. Now, Wesco is the kind of company that had been left behind. It's an infrastructure company, and it's doing miraculous work. Parker Hannifin's doing great work. Eaton's doing great work. David, if you want to know who's got an incredible reindustrialization thesis in terms of the grid, it is a company that J.P. Morgan upgraded today.
Would that be GE?
Because Vernova, which is going to be completely separated at the beginning of April, has a division. It's got wind, it's got a natural gas turbine, but it has the grid.
Yeah.
And the grid is in terrible shape, and the data centers are causing a 5% increase a year in the need for electricity, which hasn't happened. I don't know.
We have an enormous need for electricity if we are going to continue to build data centers filled with NVIDIA chips and networking equipment from the likes of Broadcom.
Marvell
that ultimately powers the generative AI models that are out there and anything yet to come. In fact, power is the gating issue right
now. Yes, it is. Thank you
for saying
that.
When you plan a new data center, because I have been talking about this a lot. I've finally also been speaking to some people who actually run these companies. And you have to, the first thing, as I said the other day, the first thing you have to do is make sure you've got the power before you...
And then you know what's
before
next.
Before you even put anything up.
Then scope three, these companies are demanding that there be no coal involved. One of the reasons why Constellation Energy, and I had them, Constellation Energy is a remarkable company. That's the spinoff. Remember, they split, it was ComEd, and they split that off. And the next thing you know, Constellation Energy is one of the greatest performers of the year because they are nuke. And nuke is, of course, the answer, but they're 5-6 year possibilities.
Yeah, it's a long, long way away. But you're right. And we may, in fact, start to slow down our deployment to a certain extent because we're going to run out of power.
Well,
I know it sounds strange to say, and we always seem to find a way, so perhaps we will, but that is a genuine concern.
Have you heard about the Sub Rosa plan of some of the hyperscalers to perhaps build their own power plants?
No.
Get involved, because they just don't think that they can necessarily trust the people who are involved. You know, Carl, a lot of these companies, they're sleepy companies. They provide the 2% electricity, perhaps, that they, that are going on. And then there's some companies that really do recognize. There's a company called Next Tracker, which has software that allows you to have solar that really works. They believe that solar is going to be 25% of our power, but we know solar is intermittent. But I have found, for instance, AEP, which was a company I really counted on, they've gone totally silent since Julie Sloat, their CEO, mysteriously left the company. I've called almost everyone involved in this situation, and it's almost like it's the Manhattan Project. I can't find out what happened there.
I'm thinking of the great paper this week by Michael Sembolist over at J.P. Morgan.
Wasn't that
looking at what would have happened in Europe if they hadn't decommissioned so much nuclear, right. How much more energy security they'd have. What would happen if we ran into huge nat gas interruptions here? And the difficulty it is to shut down a building,
right. Clear
it, and then fire it up again. That's weeks.
Oh, no, it is. I had Enbridge on. Now Enbridge is but chief. Greg Ebel used to be at Spectra. He's the number one oil pipeline. Now
he's
gunning to be the number one natural gas after buying the Dominion properties because of Dominion's stretched balance sheet. And the importance of both for domestic, for power, and, of course, for national security, amazing. But the president has pretty much kiboshed. By using that 2028 pause, he has caused a decline in natural gas to $1.70 because people don't want it. People just say, look, we don't have a place to put this stuff.
Well,
Coterra switched radically.
We're going to need natural gas for powering a lot of these plants still. Again, the wind and solar are great, but you can't always rely on them. And the Sembolist pieces, I mean, he's written a couple now in the energy transition. Of course, comes back to the idea that you need to put a price on carbon, which...
Right.
Doesn't appear that's going to happen.
And who do you think is most involved with that energy at J.P. Morgan in terms of watching what Sembolist does?
I don't know. Who?
Jamie.
Is he? Yeah.
Jamie Dimon is a... Look, I mean, I know I've had my go-arounds with Jamie, but he's like the most... He's the guy who speaks to Jensen. He works with Sembolist on energy. This man is not a banker. He is a central spokesman for industry.
Yeah.
But, you know, perilous times.
Can we move back to Marvell and Broadcom? I want to take a look at both of them,
over them
after earnings.
Matt Murphy is so great.
One thing I wanted to discuss with you, Jim, which is GAAP versus non-GAAP, which we talk about. Now, obviously, they're judged to a large extent on their revenue growth, and that moves things. But, you know, when you look through to the income statement and what, you know, stock-based comp and restructuring-related charges and amortization of acquired intangible assets and legal settlements and other special items. I mean, Marvell lost $392 million. Instead, they made $401.6 million. Now, Broadcom explains why they feel like non-GAAP is a better way to view these things, but it's still worth noting.
This company, the chairman of this company used to be Rick Hill. Rick Hill was the guy, remember, I don't know if you know, he was switched from Starboard, they went after the company.
Yeah.
And he doesn't allow any of that stuff, and he set this company up to be as conservatively run. Matt Murphy did not cause this rally, David.
All right, so you don't buy any of the, you're not worried about just the huge differential between non-GAAP and GAAP.
No, because Matt
going from losing $400 million to making $400 million.
Well, look, Matt bought this business, and he didn't realize it kind of backed into this optical business that is so good. It's the street that's driving this. I think that I happen to think the financials are solid, but if you really want to know rock solid, look at what Hock Tan delivered.
Right. Well, Hock Tan, again, I mean, the differential between GAAP net income of $1.325 billion and non-GAAP, $5.24 billion, is enormous.
Do you not think acquisitions played a role?
Of course they do. And non-GAAP information excludes amortization of acquisition-related intangible assets, stock-based comp expense, restructuring, other charges, acquisition-related costs, including integration costs, non-GAAP tax reconciling adjustments, and other adjustments. Management does not believe these items are reflective of the company's underlying performance, and internally, these non-GAAP measures are significant measures used by management for purposes of evaluating the core operating performance of the
company. I don't want to be duplicitous.
That's why everybody listens.
Everything that David said is the problem with Silicon Valley, because these numbers are not apples to apples to any of the Eastern companies. So I totally get where he's coming from.
I mean, Costco is just pretty straightforward.
Costco?
Here's what we made. here's yeah. what it cost us, and here's our earnings.
Oh, there'll be people on the call who question Rich Galanti on something, and like Rich says, let's take the next call. Yeah, you know, basically just saying you don't belong in this club. You flunked.
He'll be missed. Meantime, Jim, some stories on the tape about Huawei's innovation.
On the backs
progress.
Of AMAT and LAN?
It's due to used equipment that China's gotten their hands on out of LRCX and
AMAT. I know. Rick
AMAT.
Hill built LAM, too. He sold that to the Novellus, that combination. No, look, here. They did comply with the old rules. There's $2 billion of business that LAM lost, that LRCX lost to China. So it's not like they're, David, they're playing by the rules. But yeah. The rules came in a little bit later. And meanwhile, Huawei's got the knockoff phone. And now, David, see that?
Yeah.
This is where the actual intellectual property lies. This is how you make the stuff. We could talk about Taiwan Semi all we want, but if we look into Taiwan Semi, what do they have in there? Well, they have American intellectual property. And this is what the government correctly doesn't want this company. That's like they want to block ASMLF because these are the companies that actually make accelerated computing. They make generative.
Right. It's their equipment that Taiwan Semi puts together to obviously do a better job than anybody else in terms of nanometers.
And LAM is a little late to it, but when this is a battle between Moore's Law, Intel, okay, and Jensen Huang, Moore's Law is dead. And look, we should have Pat Gelsinger on right now because he's saying it's alive and well.
All right.
And
well, you want to put up a 20-year chart, Intel versus NVIDIA? We'll see who won that battle.
Only if it's the 1989 to 2002 chart.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 2000.
Even 10 years, actually. All you need is a 10-year chart of the two of them to show who won that battle.
LAM's a remarkable company. It's fantastic.
We're talking, there it is. See, you ask for it, you get it. All right, that kind of tells the story, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, what is that?
One's
that's a measurement.
20,000%. The other's up 86%.
Wow. And you see that right where the dip was? That's when I renamed him NVIDIA just because it just seemed it's changed the direction of the stock.
Yeah. You talked about China. We mentioned it, but it's worth perhaps coming back to as well, this potential TikTok ban yet again. If you recall, at the end of the last Trump administration, there were all sorts of plans potentially to ban TikTok, to force it to be divested by its owner, ByteDance.
Right.
And there was a potential Microsoft
bid,
Walmart bid.
Yeah.
None of which came to fruition. No. All of which was hard to figure out completely.
It was convoluted. That's the way I look at it.
But Carl,
you mentioned General Atlantic. How about General Atlantic?
Atlantic, Bill Ford's still on the board of ByteDance, of course, as is Philippe Lafon, who runs Coatue. But a lot of these TikTok users got this notice, or many, all of them, saying stop a TikTok shutdown.
Right.
And then many of them, who are younger, called Congress, even though they don't really know what Congress is.
No, that's true.
Sadly.
Right.
Another failure for our education system, perhaps. So they call Congress people that they don't really know what they are, but saying, and then the Congress people have reacted not well.
There's a lot of Congress people, so there's a lot of phone calls. They had to look that up. They Googled that, I think. They didn't use chat. They didn't go to Claude. In the meantime, can I just say that David killed Marvell and Broadcom? They were doing so well. You killed Marvell.
I didn't kill them at all. I'm just making
I have to
a
speak
point
to
that
Matt
made
Murphy.
A number
no,
of
you
times,
killed it.
Which is GAAP versus non-GAAP, which we all take, which is fine.
Such
and
a
adjusted
killjoy.
EBITDA, which is another measure that we all use. But occasionally, you just got to remind people what is part of it and what is not part of it. And certainly for a big acquirer such as Broadcom, acquisition-related costs, are they really not a part of their ongoing business
since they seem to
do acquisitions all the time?
It is, but David, if they hadn't mentioned it obliquely Jensen Huang, the stocks would be down very badly.
Yeah.
This is Jensen Huang versus David Faber right here, Marvell. It's the battle.
No, it's not. I want to come back just quickly to ByteDance because the owner of TikTok is valued at about $270 billion on its last round. Yeah. $270 billion. And you know who owns 15% of this? Susquehanna, the trading firm.
Susquehanna is smart guys out of Binghamton. They came to Philadelphia.
They made an investment a long time ago.
And they're delightful.
I think it was a $5 million investing round in 2012 when ByteDance was formed. 15% of ByteDance. It's a $270 billion, let's call it, value.
Mathematicians.
Maybe less if this TikTok ban really does... Something really happens there. By the way, if TikTok ban happens, Snap, Meta. I mean, think about all the beneficiaries, I guess, as well.
No. Look, I'm going west in a couple of weeks, and you just know, you periodically hear somebody like Susquehanna in the east, Carl, and they figured some things out, but they tend to be mathematicians and engineers in the east, computer scientists in the west, and it matters. Hey, by the way, there's a positive piece about YouTube today picking up some advertising off of this. YouTube, that's Alphabet. It's been a while since we've heard anything good about Alphabet.
Yeah. Meantime, FT's got a big piece about Instagram overtaking TikTok in-app downloads at the end of last year. Some were tying it to Threads, which you do need an Instagram account to fire up some Threads.
I saw someone go on to Threads this week and make a point of it. I thought that was very good, Carl. Look, one of the unsung things is that the Zuckerberg relationship with Jensen Huang, 350,000 H1s bought, total of 600,000 by the end power. This is to make it so that the feed is a lot. I mean, it just goes, everything goes so fast.
Those kids who wrote that they have a drinking game that they do every night based on how many times you mentioned Jensen are going to be so completely trashed. At least it's a Friday
then
night.
Then why is the numbers from Jack Daniels so bad from Brown-Forman?
I don't know what they drink.
And you know what's the biggest decliner in double digits? Casamigos.
Yes.
Don't cry for George Clooney.
Yes.
What happened?
The people have gone away from tequila a little bit.
They have? Why?
Yes, they have. Why?
Yeah.
I think it's too sweet.
Are they moving to mezcal? Are they going to mezcal,
Jim? I don't know if you saw a journal piece. Bloomberg piece. There's a mezcal piece this week that basically just says the transition from tequila to mezcal is... It's running at basically accelerated computing speed.
Yes, there's also been pieces done about where you're going to get your raw material in 5 years.
That's why we had to go to Puebla, because Oaxaca is out of mezcal.
Yeah.
They're out?
You can't. I couldn't even get 1,500 bottles worth. Well, my wife would. She's in Puebla, which is really, we have 2 million plants there. We're okay. We just need to have 2 million people drink.
Well, you
so
mentioned,
far, no, so good.
I mean, we've talked about the impact of cannabis in states where it's legal on alcohol.
So Jack
and then
Daniels?
Now, Jim, and you mentioned GLP-1s.
I know.
Oprah's going to have a special about
why she left Weight Watchers.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'll tell you that the very soul-searching call of Brown-Forman saying, listen, we can see no correlation between cannabis and this, and they deny GLP-1, but I think that the problem is that they raise price. David, the Browns, as we call them, are too expensive.
Is that what
they
it
have
is?
To cut price?
Oh.
And then there's also that old Pappy Winkle thing. You know, Angel's Envy.
Delicious.
What?
Angel's Envy?
Right now?
You don't like?
No, I don't
early,
drink in the morning. I happen to like the taste. Well,
yeah.
I'll tell you, the problem is that there's this whole class of great ones. The Woodford Reserve. They all taste fantastic. High West, I like.
High West.
But, you know, David, that's probably not... I don't know, you probably have Celsius. What a stock.
Has that been a good stock, too?
Yeah, Dow Chemical. Dow, it used to be Dow Chemical. I think they gave the chemical to Celsius. They kept the Dow.
Got it.
Come on, I have a pallet in my office if you want to just really...
Of binge. Celsius.
Yeah, if you
I've
want
seen
to
some of it showing up here, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a look at Dow for some reason, Jim, so thank you for that.
It's got a good yield.
Yeah, not bad.
Making a good comeback. Fitterling's doing a good job.
Speaking of movers, Carl, you did mention it briefly, but we should come back to Rivian because it is having a nice morning so far, up some 6.5% on, I guess, a positive...
The rollout
reception to the rollout of this new
the R2, R3. Scaringe with a tweet just now.
Really?
Saying that in less than 24 hours, we've taken more than 68,000 reservations for the R2.
Well, good, because I was going to go to that factory when it opens in Georgia. I still intend to do so, but I can't go up. It's on a CSX railway. Those guys really know what they're doing. But, David, have you driven the Rivian?
I've never driven a
Rivian. Oh, go to Brooklyn with me. Of course, my wife, because like I drive awfully. And it is just, it's so great.
Why?
Because it handles much tighter. It handles like a BMW.
Really?
Yeah, it's got that tight handle. Let's see if Steve Schert at Hertz takes some down.
Interesting. I think he's going to stay away from EVs for a little while.
Kind of a blow for Georgia economy as well. This plant was the second biggest eco development project.
I know. I committed to going to it. I'm not giving up. I think that they do have the Amazon back. The thing is really beautiful. It is just, it's a great ride. But, you know, we're just uncertain time because of the ennui for EV.
The ennui for
and
EV.
The Volvo, and don't forget the Volvo Trojan horse out of China.
Right, Greeley, the owner of Volvo. Meanwhile, our markets are doing quite well. I would just end on that with the NASDAQ up almost 0.6%. Nvidia shares, by the way, advancing another 3%.
Let me see if there's more homicide by David.
$3.8 trillion market value. Even shares Apple eating out of game.
You've got Marvell down 7%. It was doing so well.
Yeah, right.
I'm calling Matt Murphy right now and saying that you sent him an invitation to his funeral here. It's ridiculous. Let's get a hold of him.
Meantime, no real data today. We got the jobs number, of course. Williams was earlier this morning. 10-year did go to 404, and that took you back to February 2nd. Bounced a little bit since, but David's right. 5180, S&P all-time high once again. Don't go anywhere. Big question for the market is whether Apple can find some legs here around 170 after being down seven straight days. That hasn't happened for several years. And versus the S&P 52-week low, along with names like Tesla.
And they've been very quiet. It's hard to get a read on Apple right now.
Meantime, Dow up 126, though, in spite of that behemoth in the red. Stop Trading with Jim's coming up next. Let's get to Jim and Stop Trading.
Enterprise software remains the one of the dominant themes if you're in it, and if you can write on or have security involving and platformization, then you're going to be loved. So MongoDB reports last night, MDB, they were on this morning. Stock was down 35. It is now down 3, and pretty soon it'll probably be up because they're software enterprise, and it didn't matter if they gave you a weak forecast because that's the sainted part of the economy right now. Look at that, will you? The stock was down 35. No one even cares.
Right back.
Yeah. It was
Mongo
a great buy. The only one that rivals that is Datadog, which is also doing incredible.
Mongo just pawned in Game of Life.
Did they?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Meanwhile, Jim, next week we'll get Oracle along with a smattering of specialty
Oracle's
retail.
Oracle's missed twice, so let's see if they can pull it off. They better pull it off because that stock's been a severe underperformer during this period.
Yeah, Oracle and then CPI next week will be the other big
temple. No, this is big. Now, look, there's one of the things that we used to have earnings season. That went out the window. I mean, every day is earnings day. Right?
Sure, Jim. Whatever you say. You're going away for a week, so you enjoy yourself.
No, I'm on assignment or I'm off in the morning, David. Don't you know the code?
I'm sorry.
Jim has the morning off. Which means I'm by the pool. And actually, no, I'll be still working for the club. Every day I'm going to work for the club.
We're not going to see you for a couple of weeks, though, because you're going to be gone next week, and then you're going to be out with Jensen.
Next week I'm going to work for the club all week. I'm going to have my 10-20 call because the club is the thing.
The club is the thing.
Shorter term tonight?
What, for
Mad Money?
I've got an amazing show tonight. I'm going over the European Mag 7, which now that we've lost the American Mag 7, I'm going to do the, this is going to be the Rashomon version, by the way.
Where you never really know.
Exactly.
Yes.
Thank you.
Jim, can't wait.
Yeah, to be on assignment and have the morning off with you guys is quite a thing.
We'll miss you.
Will you say it in the morning that Jim has a morning off? Will you do that for me?
I will update people on your whereabouts at all times.
I'm at the club. There's love in the club, by the way, at 10:20.
Yes, a lot of people are. We'll see you tonight, Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time. In the meantime, 16 points from 5,200. Don't go anywhere.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
All opinions expressed by the Squawk on the Street participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information Squawk on the Street participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Squawk on the Street disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Squawk on the Street disclaimer.